Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of JNPO Retro here on WrestlingObserver.com. I'm Josh Nason, writer, editor, host of Josh Nason's Punch Out here on the site. Hope you guys are having a great Memorial Day weekend. As you might know, this is our continuing look back at the WJAM MMA show, a radio show that myself and my friend PJ Hewitt hosted back 6 years ago. And I unearthed the archives and I'm going back week by week and putting them up here on the site, but also cutting a new intro, kind of let you know what the show is about, any kind of inside details and other stuff that was going on at the time. For this, we go back to May 26, 2011. Again, May 26, 2011, it was the Thursday before Memorial Day weekend, which, again, we're out here right now. And our preview, a UFC event going on that weekend, was UFC 130, and we previewed the show that was headlined. It was one of those cards that was a little bit ravaged by injury. It wasn't really that good anyway, but going into it. But it was Frank Mir versus Roy Nelson and Rampage Jackson versus Matt Hamill, who was filling in for Thiago Silva. So we talked about that. We discussed how really no one was selling the fight in the main, really with the top three guys, Mir, Nelson, and Jackson, how no one was really selling the fight at all. We were a little disappointed by that. We were joined by Rick Story, who was fighting Thiago Alves on that show. For some reason, I kept saying Thiago over and over and over again. So I noticed that when doing the re-listen to the show. This is probably the longest Rick Story interview you're ever going to hear. I will tell you that. I asked a lot of generic questions, and that's my fault. I've been doing interviews a lot at this point, but still, there was no excuse for some of these questions I was asking. It was the most generic one. But as the interview went on, and I kept hitting myself in the head thinking, my God, why was I asking this dumb question after this dumb question? We did get a little bit into some of his trips overseas and his first – when the UFC did their first trip to Germany, Rick was on that show. So he talked a little bit about that, the issues some of the MMA fighters faced over there. And so on. But so slog your way through that interview. It gets a little bit better near the end, but it's about as generic a radio interview as you're going to get. So I'm going to warn you about that. Also, we DJ PJ and I went into depth on Dan Severn's goal or his search for his 100th win in Worcester, Massachusetts. If you've listened to the first couple of these, you know that we were kind of talking about this show coming up. So it happened, and what happened at that show rocked PJ and I in not a good way. Very violent knockout, and we talk about that. We kind of talk with Dan Severn, should be doing, and just kind of the scene down there. So that's pretty good. And we also get this: there was actually a must see episode of The Ultimate Fighter with New England guy and now pro wrestler Chuck O'Neill. He was on a fight on the show. There's a couple fights on the show. There was an instant retirement on the show, which I'd completely forgot about due to some injuries suffered in one of the fights. And also Tony Ferguson, the guy that is now regarded as one of the best lightweights in the world and someone that everyone wants to see fight for this interim title against Khabib Nurmagomedov at some point in this in the future if we ever get that fight. He actually was kind of a dick on the show. I completely forgot about this. He actually turned heel. Completely had escaped my memory. So PJ and I talk about that as well. So it's a fun 45 minutes. Again, this is all about Memorial Day weekend's UFC 130. So I will leave you in the hands of yours truly back in the day and PJ Hewitt for the latest edition of the WJAM MMA show dating back to May 26, 2011. The gateway to summer, Memorial Day weekend, is upon us, and that only means one thing. It's time for UFC 130, and we are joined tonight live by one of the competitors on the card, Rick Story. It's Thursday, May 26, 2011, and the MMA show on WGAM The Game is live. Hello, everyone. Josh Nason and PJ Hewitt coming to you from the WGAM studios in downtown Nashua, New Hampshire. And like Bruce Buffer, PJ says, it's time.
It's time.
It's time to go. Tonight, we have a preview of UFC 130. As I mentioned, we're talking to Rick Story, a UFC welterweight on the rise, talking him in segment two. And we're going to talk about our trip to Worcester, Massachusetts last weekend. We did a little road show where, PJ, we saw Dan Severn get knocked out very, very badly.
Oh, it's a brutal, brutal knockout. And, I don't know if I was expecting them to get knocked out. You know, I didn't expect a great fight from him, but we'll get to it a little bit later on. He did not look like the Dan Severn of old from 10, 15 years ago.
He looked like Dan Severn at his very old.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that in our final segment. I also talk this week's Ultimate Fighter show scored a season low in ratings, but a local boy did good, and it was one of my favorite shows of the season. So, having all said all of that, well, let's get into UFC 130 this Saturday night, coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. We think it's warm here today in Nashua. It is very warm in Las Vegas, Nevada. An event that is not very buzzworthy right now by any means, both by media, fans, and the fighters themselves. Three out of the four guys in the main event are guys that know how to sell fights. Frank Mir, Roy Nelson, Rampage Jackson. None of them are doing anything to sell this fight.
No, especially Rampage Jackson. He just seems very, I don't want to say down, but just even keeled. You know, not hyped up. I guess there's no reason to hate Matt Hamill. You know, how can you really hate Matt Hamill? But they did a little bit on UFC, the Countdown show last night. Got a chance to watch that, and Hamill's doing his best to try to say, this is why I want to fight Rampage Jackson. This is why I know I can beat him. The Rampage camp is pretty much saying, like, yeah, he's, you know, he's in a different class. Well, Rampage is in a different class, right? That, but yeah, we go out there. We're aware of his skill, but Rampage should have no trouble with that. That's about as hyped up as it got. Yeah. He's all right, but we'll beat him.
So the main event of the night, the default main event, is Quentin Rampage Jackson versus Matt Hamill. A battle at 205 pounds. This was originally going to be the co-main event. Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar III put off due to injury. So we're stuck with this main event, which initially was looked great as a co-main event. Rampage, as you mentioned, he's early 30s, and a guy that right now I really question is his motivation. I think that training-wise, he doesn't seem to like to train and kind of get down there to where he needs to be. I mean, he walks around pretty heavy, 245, 250. That's a big cut to cut down to 205 pounds, and he has to do that for the fight. So that's obviously very physically taxing on the body, but also the motivation level. He was really motivated to fight Thiago Silva. Thiago Silva was pulled from the event because of a failed drug test, as we've talked about in the show before. So Matt Hamill got put in there, and immediately Rampage didn't show any excitement level, admitted as such. And he's done a little bit better this week. Apparently he said he got him a little bit angry, and Matt Hamill said he was going to break his will, and Rampage took some offense to that. But overall, as a main event, I mean, Matt Hamill is a great story and a guy that's fought a lot of great names. He's fought guys like Rich Franklin, John Jones, other guys I'm forgetting. Keith Jardine. And he's got wins, but he's not regarded as an upper echelon 205er. However, he is going to get a chance to move into that category and that discussion if he can beat Rampage Jackson Saturday night.
And that's a big if. He's coming in, I think, a very heavy underdog. And Rampage said in the press conference yesterday that he can have that underdog role. Like, if he thinks, I like being the underdog, but if he wants to be the underdog, yeah, I'll let him be the underdog. So it you mentioned the fight, even the fighters like Frank Mir and Roy Nelson not kind of hyping this up, especially when they need it to be hyped up, because coming off the event in Toronto, record crowd, up there was, as far as record buys, I think, or at least the buys were for pay-per-view were,
I haven't actually seen the numbers yet, but I know obviously the attendance in Livegate were just the amount of money generated by that was tremendous. But there's such goodwill, right? Because you have 55,000 people there. It's a great story, the spectacle. And then usually what happens is UFC does these multiple events a month. So even if there's a bad event, you kind of can, you have a good, really quick, you can get the bad taste out of your mouth, right? So they've had a month since this great event, and now they're building up to this, and it just doesn't, it doesn't feel like anything. One note, just, okay, so here's some of the guys that Matt Hamill has faced and also beaten. Tito Ortiz, Keith Jardine, John Jones, even though John Jones was beating him up pretty good, and because of a 12-6 elbow, he got disqualified, but still a win. Mark Munoz, a loss to Rich Franklin, a loss to Michael Bisping. So he's fought talented guys, 10-2 record. Been fighting professionally since 2005, been in the UFC since...
He is 34 years old, though.
He is. He's been in the UFC since 2006. He's been there a long time. That's crazy. I thought, it just didn't feel like he'd been there for that long, but that's the main event. What's your prediction?
My prediction actually is the upset. I'm taking Mark Hamill.
Mark Hamill, the guy from Star Wars?
Excuse me.
I think I would bet against
I knew
you.
I would do that at some point.
That's like me with diverticulitis.
Yeah.
Look at how, I knew it, how smooth that
you know, because when I was writing up the, for the blog, I was writing up the UFC 130 preview, and I kept writing Mark Hamill the whole time. So it's just on, yeah, I'm taking Hamill in the fight, though.
Against Darth Jackson.
Darth Rampage.
I will take Hamill as well. I'm going to take him by unanimous decision. I have a hard time buying the Rampage is into this. He's become a decision fighter. He's not the exciting guy from Pride and then the early UFC fights. There's just something different about him. And it's kind of this weird, like, ambivalence with him when it comes to this. So I'm going to take Matt Hamill by unanimous decision, and we'll see you on Saturday night.
Yeah, and I'll take Matt Hamill as well by decision. I think the longer this fight goes, the more it favors Matt Hamill. You mentioned questioned the training and the work ethic right now of Rampage. They kind of tried to put it over. He had his own show following The Ultimate Fighter called In the Moment, where they kind of tried to push it like, yeah, he is taking this fight seriously. This is what he does. And one of his trainers pretty much has to babysit him the whole time, tell him when to go to bed, when, you know, this, it's time to train here now. And he pretty much acts like a kid, you know, just playing video games the whole time. His head isn't into it. At least they didn't convey that to me, that he's really, you know, really focused on this fight. He says he is, but I don't believe it.
Co-main event, Frank Mir versus Roy Nelson, a battle of heavyweights and a battle of BFFs, apparently. Their wives are also BFFs. I mean, I don't know about you. If I was going to fight my friend and I had a wife and they was going to, my wife, the best friend I was going to fight, I don't know how motivated I'd be to kick a guy's ass, basically, you know.
Right.
I don't know. I was so excited looking in this fight and saying it's Mir Nelson, two guys are going to talk, and there was real, they were friends, and it's kind of like, I guess, I don't know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. And Roy Nelson at the press conference yesterday they asked him about fighting Frank and what it would mean to him, and to just kind of reiterate our point about not really hyping up the fight, this is what he had to say.
It's just a great opportunity just to, you know, be fighting Frank. You know, Frank is a legend of the UFC heavyweight division. I mean, he's been in there for 10 plus years. So for me to be able to say that I beat a legend and a two-time heavyweight champ, I'm all for that.
It's like, yeah, if it happens, that'll be great.
Yeah. When's the last time that Frank Mir fought?
I believe he fought Mirko Krokop.
When was that?
I'll have to look it up real quick, and I don't know off the top of my head. It was last year, right?
September 2010.
Yeah.
So it's a while ago. Before that, he lost to Shane Carwin.
The fight wasn't really that exciting either. They danced around for 2.5 rounds, and then he caught him and knocked him out. But
so just kind of going to look at Frank Mir's last four fights. Lost to Krokop September 2010. Beat Krokop September 2010. Lost to Shane Carwin March 2010. Beat Chet Congo in December 2009.
Everybody beats Chet Congo.
And lost to Brock Lesnar in July 2009. So really a 500 fighter, a guy that is he's actually, you know, the instinct to say he's old. I mean, he's 32, so I'm 33, so I don't want he's a young pup to me, but it's mileage, right? It's mileage over all those years, not only fighting but the training and all that. And Frank Mir, in the past couple of years, he's gone over this really kind of like this body transformation. And I remember he got like really heavy for the I believe it was the Shane Carwin fight, put on all this muscle, and he just, the problem is it takes a lot of oxygen to support all that muscle, and guys get worn out, and he wasn't good. He was more thinking about Brock Lesnar than he was, say, a guy like Shane Carwin. So with Mir, I don't know. After that Krokop fight, I didn't really have any interest in seeing him fight again. We'll see what he brings on Saturday night.
Yeah, and he said yesterday he'd be coming in at 265. So he's right at the limit there. I mean, Roy Nelson's a guy who, he looks just heavy. It's becoming cliche now, but you can't trust his body shape with his conditioning, because his conditioning is fantastic. He's got a great ground game as well. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and he's stand-up. He has knockout power. So they're pretty even going into that, going into the fight. But Roy Nelson has an iron jaw, and I think I really don't think this fight's going to go to the ground very. I think these guys are just going to try to slug it out. Maybe I don't see them, either one of them, in their game plan. It's like, well, I'm going to try to take him to the ground and work jiu-jitsu, even though they're both really good jiu-jitsu and both black belt jiu-jitsu guys. I think they're just going to slug it out. And I think Roy Nelson will probably get the knockout for it, because I Frank Mir will not knock out Roy Nelson.
Well, here's why I disagree.
Okay.
All right. he's shown that he can be knocked out. Andre Arlovsky, back in October 2008, one of the most notable knockouts on CBS. This was when CBS had the deal with Lydia C. Arlovsky comes off of the right and just drops Nelson. That was the first time I've ever seen Nelson fight in any capacity. I'm like, who is this guy? I remember writing a column at the time about this big guy on TV didn't look like a fighter and all that. And, you know, he got knocked out. That was
a long way from that fight, though.
That was, well, okay, so since then, he's lost to Jeff Monson by decision. Then it kicked off his UFC career. After Tough, he knocked out Brendan Schaub. He knocked out Stefan Struve, which I was surprised about. I saw that live in Charlotte, and it was amazing. Stefan Struve, still kind of a young fighter. He's actually fighting on this show. We'll talk about him in just a minute. And then losing to Junior Dos Santos in August 2010. He went through a war in that one, no doubt about it. So it's tough to say. Nelson's one of those guys that just when you think you have him pegged, he changes the game a little bit. It'd be interesting to see him in a ground game. I mean, the only time I've really kind of seen him in that is when on the Ultimate Fighter with Kimbo Slice, when he had and James McSweeney, when he had kind of the lay into him. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Just lay his gut on him and things like that. But I'd like to see him get tested. I'd really like to see a really great fight here. I know it sounds obvious, but I'd really love to see a great fight.
And I don't think you're going to get it. You're just going to see. Well, I'll give you, if you want a great fight to be just guys just trying to pound the crap out of each other, punch each other in the face, I think that's going to be it. I don't think this fight is going to the ground, even though, like I said, they're both, you know, have very established ground games in their disciplines. But as far as fights, they, you know, I just don't see it. I'm actually kind of, if this fight is good, I'll be happy because I really don't see it.
Another heavyweight fight, Stefan Struve versus
the
Travis
skyscraper.
Brown. What do you think about this one?
I think Struve's a guy who's really improved over his last few fights. You know, had a couple setbacks and, you know, got knocked out by Roy Nelson. But his last few fights, he seems to have really stepped up his game a little bit. And you're starting to see what this guy, you know, who is, what, 6'7", 6'8", just a monster. I think he still needs to put on a little bit of weight.
Stefan Struve?
Stefan Struve.
6'11".
6'11", excuse me. Yeah. God, I'm forgetting he's that tall.
He's
But I mean, he only weighs in at like 245, 250. And he has put on, I think, about 10 pounds since from his last like three fights ago.
He looks skinny. Like he looks like an NBA player.
If he could put on a little bit more weight, I think, and fight at 260, you know, in that range, you know, he's so tall. But I think that would help his game a little bit. You know, but he's a fantastic kickboxer, so he's got the stand-up. He can choke guys out, and he can tap guys out. So I really think he's going to do pretty well against Travis Brown, even though Brown has looked impressive as well.
One of the interesting things about Stefan Struve is he's 23 years old, right? He's 23. He has already had 25 professional fights.
Yeah.
He fought a ton overseas, and he just fought, like, all the time. He last was seen beating the hell out of Sean McCorkle, and McCorkle got released. Before that being Christian Moorcraft, before that losing Roy Nelson, being Paul Buntel. So he's had a good run in the UFC, but he's a guy that I think they're waiting to take that leap. If he can get a dominant win over Travis Brown, tough guy, you know, he can't look at this as a trap fight. And I think it's good. This is why I like the UFC matchmaking styles that, you know, they put these guys together and they're both two young fighters and they're both on the way up. So they're not trying to overmatch guys. And I think that's good with the win. Next step up for Stefan Struve. And Travis Brown, obviously, get some good standing for himself as well. So having said all that, we're going to go to our first break of the evening. We're going to be talking to Rick Story from the UFC after this. You are listening to the MMA Show on Sports Radio, WGAM, The Game. Welcome back to the WGAM MMA Show, Thursday night, previewing UFC 130, and we're happy to welcome to the show for the first time a man that will be competing on the pay-per-view portion of that card against Thiago Alves. We're here talking to Rick Story. Rick, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good, man. Listen, it's a couple days away from the big fight. You're on pay-per-view. What's your mindset? What's going on right now?
You know, right now I'm actually relaxing out by the pool before I have to start cutting weight. But my mindset, you know, I'm focused. I'm ready to go. I've trained hard for this camp, and I'm ready to make weight and get this fight on the road.
Now, you say you're out by the pool now. You're in Las Vegas right now, and I don't know about you. I've seen Las Vegas pools on TV, and usually the scenery is pretty good out there. I mean, what's the evaluation of what you're seeing right now?
Yeah, you know what? It's not too bad, actually. Not bad.
We'll get back to the fighting part. So Thiago Alves, a tough guy, 170 pounds. You know, you've been in the UFC for a couple of years. Do you think this is your biggest test of your UFC career to date?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. And we wanted it to be that way for this fight coming up, or for my next fight after my last one. I wanted to get somebody that would progress my career the fastest. And my coach, Pat White, and myself thought that Alves would be the best opportunity for that to happen.
So Alves is, you know, an interesting guy in that, you know, the past couple of years he's had a real stigma about losing weight, cutting down. Started working with Mike Dolce for the John Howard fight, got down there and banged out a decision. He's a guy that's interesting that he can take to the ground, but obviously likes to keep it standing. What, without giving your, you know, complete game plan away here on air, what type of things have you been preparing for this fight?
You know, Alves is a great striker. He's got very great striking and devastating leg kicks. So, obviously, I've been working on flip punches and check kicks and, you know, just working that into our game plan. That way we work out the best.
So, for people that have not heard of you before, and we have a lot of mainstream fans that listen to the show, you've been in the UFC since June 2009, debuted a loss to a prospect in John Hathaway, but since then, five straight victories, and going into this one looking for number six. What did you change after that first fight to go in this this nice win streak?
After the first fight, you know, it kind of left a bad taste in my mouth and worked hard to get to where I've been at or where I was into the UFC, and I didn't want to let that slip. I didn't want that to go away because, you know, if you're not performing and you're losing fights, you get cut from this promotion. So, you know, my back was against the wall when I went into my next fight against Foster, and haven't looked back since. I've gone into every fight with that mentality that, you know, it could be my last fight. Anything could happen. I could get in a car accident and I couldn't fight. I just want to be remembered as being one of the best fighters. So,
yeah, talking to Rick Story here, live on air, fighting this this Saturday, UFC 130. This card as a whole, I mean, you know, a Memorial Day weekend is usually a big weekend. There's, you know, some good talk about the show, you know, Rampage Jackson, Matt Hamill fighting with all these guys. I mean, you're looking around in this card. I mean, kind of, I don't say get ahead of yourself, but you kind of, do you have that feeling of you're kind of getting there in your career and really at this next step of kind of take a giant leap up to the next level?
Yeah. And I mean, things are a lot different. I mean, since I got bumped up to the main card on pay-per-view and everything, you know, there's a lot more media, there's a lot more interviews and stuff, and a lot more exposure. So, in that regard, it's pretty different. But, you know, it's really easy to stay focused for me. Being in my camp at Brave League, we keep it realistic and never look past one fight. You know, we take one fight at a time and like come out with a win.
So tell us a little bit about how you first got into MMA. I see that, you know, you've had a wrestling background, which a lot of guys have, but tell us about how you made that transition and what got you to that point you decided to jump in a cage and start fighting guys.
It was actually something to do in the off season of wrestling when I was going through the Ultimate Fighter had just come out. I think it was 2004, and I was only like 19 or 20. And my wrestling friends and we watched like the whole season and started doing MMA and stuff, just practicing submission wrestling, and then took some local fights and, you know, just got involved that way. And then ran into some people that said it would be good if, you know, I took up fighting as a career because I was really good. I was really explosive. And I could probably go pretty far. And, you know, I kind of took that into consideration, especially after 6 seconds in the Nation for Southern Oregon Wrestling. I wanted to stay athletic. I didn't want to let myself go because I've seen a lot of people, like, a couple years later after athletics and they let themselves go. I didn't want to be one of those people. I wanted to, while I was young and my body was capable, to capitalize on what I had. So, now I'm fighting.
So you actually went to Southern Oregon University, is that correct?
Correct.
Now, I'm a little familiar with college sports, and I know you've heard of Oregon, you know, their big run, the national title. Tell us a little bit about Southern Oregon University.
Southern Oregon University is down in Ashland, Oregon. Really nice area. It's pretty liberal. I kind of stay out of the politics game. But for the most part, it was a really nice school, really nice area, and made some of the best friends of my life there. And, I can't be around them right now, but I like the college experience. I like what I brought from there. My coach in wrestling, he's like, his words stuck with me and his teaching. And, overall, I took from there a very positive experience.
Now, Rick, you said that you had some encouragement with your friends and to help you get into MMA because you were good at it. I think you've proved that so far. You have 12 wins in your first 15 fights. Are you at the point now where you thought you'd be when you first got back into, or when you first started MMA? Are you right there? Are you ahead of schedule in your mind as to where you are?
It has happened pretty quick, but, looking at the big picture and how much work and how much effort I put in, it's right on time. I train hard and I train a lot, and it's expected. So, it is kind of quick, but then again, I think it's well deserved.
Talking to Rick Story, fighting against Thiago Alves, pay-per-view card of UFC 130 this Saturday night. Now, I do have to, I'm looking over, where you've been, and fighting has taken you, since you've been in the UFC, taking you to some interesting places. Cologne, Germany is one I want to ask about first. Now, everything I've heard about the German crowds, and they're kind of hostile towards MMA in terms of, like, the media and things like that. Did you get that impression when you were there?
At first, yeah, because even in Cologne, when you go to the local restaurants, like around the hotel that we're staying at, we'd ask them if they'd be, or if they were excited for the UFC to be there, and they didn't know what the UFC was. So, they packed the stadium, but it was kind of crazy because just, at the local restaurants around the hotel, people didn't know what the UFC was. So, in that regard, it kind of caught me off guard, but it seemed like everybody was pretty receptive when I walked out, because I was the first person to walk out.
So, Rick, I knew you were popular, but I'm hearing there's a party in the background there. I didn't know how popular you were, man.
No, I'm sitting out at the pool.
One of the things I talk about that, you went for Germany. And then you went to Abu Dhabi. You fought on that kind of historic Abu Dhabi card. That is a lot different than fighting in Las Vegas, Oakland, California, Dallas, Texas, or Oregon. That must have been a pretty crazy experience.
Yeah, it was pretty different. For one, going out of country and going into a different culture, that's different in itself. And, the culture over in Abu Dhabi is just, completely opposite what you expect. And besides the jet lag and the culture difference, the heat, it was in the winter there and it was still like 96 degrees. It was crazy.
So we really like nicknames here, and I like to find out where nicknames come from. You have one of the better ones, I think, in the UFC with the Horror. How did that nickname come about?
My coach, Todd White, he decided on my nickname after he saw me fight my first couple of professional fights. And I was thinking that I was going to be one of those guys that would go without a nickname. But after he brought that to my attention and was like, oh, I got it. And said that the Horror Story would be a good one for me. I was like, I got a smile on my face and I said, yeah, that's pretty cool. I like it. So the Horror Story stuck from then on.
So as we wrap up the interview, thanks again. Appreciate the time, Rick, talking to UFC welterweight Rick Story. For people that have not ever seen you fight, and this Saturday could be their first opportunity to do so, what should they expect to see from you?
They should just expect to see an exciting fight. because Alvis goes and meets in the middle, and I go and meet in the middle, and I always push forward. He seems to always push forward, so, you know, this is going to be a fight that everyone's going to want to tune in and watch.
Any, we always like to ask about any, you know, sponsor plugs, social media plugs, you know, the floor is yours, plug away.
Yeah, I'd like to thank my team, Brave Legion, in Vancouver, Washington. Everybody wants to check out where I train in my gym, it's bravelegion.com. I'd like to thank my coach, Pat White, Pat Fristino, my boxing coach, and my other coach, Ray Armstrong. And I'd like to thank my sponsor, Hayabusa, and Ammo Scale, and all my students that train at my gym and support me. And I'd like to thank all the other fans out there that are tuning in to watch me fight.
Rick Story, he fights this Saturday night, UFC 130, against Thiago Alves on the pay-per-view portion of the card. So pull out your credit cards, buy that fight, watch Rick Story, hopefully defeat Thiago Alves. We'll pull for Rick Story tonight. Rick, thanks for joining us. Best of luck this Saturday and the future.
All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Rick Story from the UFC. Nice guy.
Yeah. I'm kind of pulling for him a little bit now.
Yeah, well, we have to.
When they're kind enough to give us a few minutes and talk to us, yeah, they always become an MMA show favorite.
No no lie is that. I actually been really wanting to talk to him for a while. And I like talking to those guys who are kind of that next group, right? And he's a guy that's really interesting. He's fought on a lot of these pay-per-view events, but mostly on the undercard. And he's kind of now got his shot with, you know, the roster kind of thinned out a little bit. In terms of superstars for this card. So interesting. You know, one of those guys, you know, he's won 5 fights in a row. He's in a division that right now needs some dogs to kind of step forward. We've talked about 170 before. Now that John Fitch is hurt and out for 6 months, GSP status is kind of up in the air right now.
Dana White came out, said he will more than likely not fight in that Montreal card in December, and the whole fight with Diaz is up in the air right now.
Yeah, I don't get that. We'll actually talk about that a little bit later, but you know, with Rick, he's in a division right now that, again, needs some guys to kind of step forward. And he's an opportunity now with these guys out and people wanting fresh faces at 170. You know, he knocks out Thiago Alves or beats Thiago Alves. He now puts himself in that next echelon of, we got to start looking at this kid for another big fight and potentially a title fight down the road. And Thiago Alves, though, he's a tough guy to fight.
He is. He's nicknamed the Pitbull for a reason. And he's had some, we've mentioned before, you mentioned when you were talking to Rick, that he's had some trouble cutting weight. The UFC gave him one chance, I believe, for his last fight to make weight, to make sure that he made weight. He did make weight, and he ended up getting the win over John Howard, who's a guy that I've talked to before. And he's a very good young fighter and another local guy from around here. So, it's going to be a really tough fight and a really good fight. At least I expect it to be.
Yeah. So he beat John Howard, and John Howard is, again, you mentioned, a local guy.
Yeah.
Well, we have to root for Rick Story. We have to avenge our New England buddy, John Howard. But he's, Thiago Alves. Now, if he's got the weight things down, then he's a tough dude. That's another guy at 170 that can make some noise. That'll be an interesting fight this Saturday night at UFC 130. And, I think it's good for another break.
I think it's time.
Are you ready for another break?
Let's do it.
I know the people at home are probably upset, but that's okay. We won't disappoint them. So again, we're final segment coming up. We're going to talk about our trip to Worcester, The Ultimate Fighter with Chuck O'Neill, and much more. You're listening to the MMA Show on Sports Radio, WGAM, The Game. Final segment on the WGAM MMA Show for a Thursday night. Talking about UFC 130. And actually, as I say this, I look up on the screen and there's a UFC 130 preview going on.
Very good. Rick Story is a part of.
Hey, if you're just joining us now, shame on you, hurting our feelings on this Memorial Day weekend. Big preview of UFC 130. Start off the show. Talk to you, Rick Story, who's fighting on that card on the second part of the show. Great interview with him. And now we're going to talk a little bit about our road trip. Which don't have sponsor yet. If you want to sponsor our road trips, call the station WGAM and say you want to sponsor our road trips. Gas is expensive, y'all.
Indeed.
PJ and I went to the thriving metropolis of Worcester, Massachusetts last Friday night to take part in Warrior Nation
XFA.
That is correct. Diverticulitis.
Diverticulitis.
Warrior Nation.
Matt Hamill. Matt Hamill.
Warrior Nation XFA. First ever show. The reason we went down there is we went to see Dan the Beast Severn compete in the main event, going for his 100th victory. PJ, did Dan Severn get his 100th victory?
Unfortunately, he did not.
Did Dan Severn walk out of that fight feeling okay?
I'm going to say no, he didn't, though I haven't spoken to him about it.
I would guess that his head must have been ripping for hours. So let's kind of give you the scene. Now, we got to be honest here. There was not a lot of people there. It was held at the DCU Center. So PJ and I are walking up. And there, I looked at him, and I'm like, there's really nobody around here.
The lights are off.
The doors are locked. I just, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I think I might get the wrong day. And we walked around. It's like, okay, actually, go, you know, it's like, go to these gates instead. So it wasn't like the main DCU Center entrance.
It was a little conference center.
Convention center.
Convention center, yeah.
So it's a little like a convention center. And I didn't know it existed. The place is huge. But so actually, like, okay, that should make sense. It probably could fit, you know, about maybe 2,500 or so with all the seats. But there wasn't a lot of people there. And I don't know if it was lack of promotion or something like that. But for whatever reason, it was not well attended, not at the start and not at the finish. There was a couple reports saying there was 1,200, 1,500 people.
Lies there. And slander.
Yeah, and it wasn't from the actual promoter itself, so we'll put him in the clear.
Yep.
But I think it was like one of the local papers, like the Worcester Gazette or something. It was completely inaccurate.
I think they could hold about 1,200 people if they filled it, but there are a couple hundred maybe, and most of them were just friends and family.
Yeah, so a lot of good amateur fights. You can actually, if you go to bloodyelbow.com and search for Dan Severn, you can see my recap on it. PJ just posted a recap on
WGAMMMA.blogspot.com.
You can actually see his recap. Yep. I haven't read it yet because he just posted it a little bit earlier today. So Dan Severn competed in the main event against Lee Bean. Lee Bean is a Y Crew product. And 8-3, not exactly a heavyweight on the rise, but you know, a good local fighter, and who knows what happens from there. So
coincidentally enough, also nicknamed the Beast.
Yes, a battle of the beasts.
Yes.
If it was pro wrestling, the winner would take the nickname and the loser would lose the nickname. But alas,
not to be confused with Battle Beasts, the little toy from the 1980s.
Or Altered Beast from Sega Genesis, which was awesome at Toys R Us. I remember playing that. But I digress. So Dan Severn comes out in the first round and throws very meek leg kicks. Like, just looks like he is so stiff, not warmed up, and just...
When you say meek, like, he's trying to throw, like, a front leg kick that's really not getting above knee high.
No.
Like, shin high at best.
And you know, my expectation level is not, you know, Thiago Alves or Jose Aldo or something like that. But he was, I mean, I'm not a professional, but I wonder if those kicks would even hurt me,
no,
to be honest with you. So I was like, okay. And then he started throwing a few kind of lazy punches and just didn't look warmed up. And I don't, again, different guys train differently, but it just, he didn't seem to be like ready to go. Right. And Lee Bean throws some leg kicks of his own. Really good looking.
Much
stuff.
More effective. Yeah. And solid leg kicks.
Those started to hurt him. Throws a straight right, staggered Severn, and then loaded up and threw a right hook that just connected right above Severn's, right in the cheekbone. He dropped.
Eyes went dark, and yeah, he back against the cage and slumped over, and he was out. We had a great view of Severn's face.
Yes.
And we were sitting cage side, by the way, which is very nice.
Yeah, we're the press.
Yeah.
We're the press. The bad part is the referee did not immediately call the fight off.
No, he hit him five more times after he had knocked him out.
Which is just dreadful.
And then he
absolutely dreadful.
And if you see the there's videos posted online, you can see Lee Bean look for the ref and kind of throw his hands like he's done, and then he just raised his hands in victory, and then the refs came around and stepped in. So the bad ref job out of there. Yeah, after he went down, that should have been it. But yeah, he landed five more vicious blows after he had knocked him out.
Yeah, not cool. No. Not cool at all. So Dan,
not Bean's fault.
No, I mean,
he's doing his job.
He looked to the ref first off, and the ref's like, keep going. And people are not happy about this. I know that already. So Dan Severn was out. He was on the ground for at least 5 minutes being attended to. I felt so sad watching this. I see guys get knocked out all the time, and it's just one of those that you feel bad for guys or whatever. I legitimately felt sad.
Yeah. Cause like I wrote in the blog posting, this guy was one of the foundations or part of the foundation that helped build what is now the sport. It wasn't called MMA back then when those first UFC events. It was no holds barred fighting or whatever, however they wanted to.
Yeah.
Yep. However they referred to it. So it wasn't really officially dubbed MMA yet. And he's one of the guys that helped build the UFC and helped build the sport. And to see him get knocked out in the way that he got knocked out was, you said, very sad to see. The ring announcer, I didn't catch his name, but said as much to the guy sitting around him. It's like he's a legend. And it's right. Oh, it's sad.
So he's trying to get 100 wins, and
that's it. I hope he gets his because he's going to fight again. You thought he hopped on the mic afterwards. You thought he was going to retire on the spot.
Just the way he was talking. Yeah. So afterwards, he got on the mic for a few minutes and decided to, you know, thank the fans and, you know, do a good speech, which was good. It wasn't like it was good to actually see him do that and not just see him like escort out of the cage and be like, oh my God, this is just the worst. So immediately I'm just like, he should never fight again. I looked at, he's fighting like almost every month, and
this was his fifth fight in 2011, and it happened last week.
It's Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like he's fought a lot, and he's won some of those fights. So this is what I said he should do. Go. He's fighting a lot in Canada, right? Because he's in Michigan. They have a lot of events in Canada that he headlines. Go to Canada, have a promoter find a guy that can't punch, tomato can style. Just get your 100th win and retire, and just don't get hurt. Do not get hurt. And coincidentally, less than 12 hours later, Roy Jones Jr., a boxer, gets knocked out in an equally terrible fashion. Another bad referee stoppage. Go find that on YouTube. But not a good weekend for veterans. What do you got?
You know, he has lost. Severn has lost his two fights, so he's failed to get his one.
By TKO.
Yes. Yeah. First by TKO due to punches in the third round at an event up in, as we mentioned last week, or I think Dawson Creek, Canada.
Yes, Dawson's Creek.
And then lost to Lee Bean. Before that, he had won 10 fights in a row, dating back to May of 2009. Mm. He's fighting all the time, and he's been effective.
Finally.
So he figured out, well, we might as well go for 100 wins. But I really hope he hangs it up. I hope they just throw out some schlub, his first or second professional fight, that Severn's just able to experience through and get the victory so he can say, I'm finally done.
Yeah, I hope so. Let's all hope that, people. So final 5 minutes of the show. I want to talk about The Ultimate Fighter. And real quick, awesome show. Just
one of the best of the season so far.
I think the best of the season by far. And that the season has not been great. So it didn't take a lot. Two good fights and a storyline at the end that is just all get out. You want to quickly recap?
Yeah, the first fight was Team Lesnar's Chuck O'Neill versus Team Dos Santos' Zach Davis. And Zach Davis referred to as a Gary Busey lookalike. I think he looks more like the son, Jake Busey. He's got the really light blonde hair and the big teeth. I beat Chuck O'Neill and knocked him out of the competition earlier on. So it was a rematch between those two guys. And this fight was all Chuck O'Neill. Zach Davis really had no offense. Anything he had was answered or countered by Chuck O'Neill. Went to decision. All the judges scored at 20-18 in the two-round format of The Ultimate Fighter. Dominant performance by Chuck O'Neill. They go to commercial, they come back, they're sitting at the house, Chuck O'Neill's talking to the other guys about how tough Zach Davis was. Zach Davis then returns from the hospital, and this is where it got a little heart-wrenching. He comes in and says that both his retinas, the retinas on each eye, had been partially removed, or partially come
detached.
Off. Detached.
Yep.
They had to have laser surgery right then. He didn't lose any vision. His vision is still one as it was. However, the doctor said he can no longer fight again. That was his last fight. He is done.
He had to get emergency laser surgery.
Yeah, he says, and obviously if the retinas come off completely, he loses 100% vision. So that's it. He's done. He is not going to fight again.
Yeah, pretty bad. Pretty bad.
So in a way, and he says too, you know, just when things are starting to get good, something like this happens. The next fight was Team Dos Santos' Ryan McGilvery versus Team Lesnar's Tony Ferguson. This fight, if you blinked, you might have missed it. They came out. Tony landed a nice inside leg kick and then dropped McGilvery with a short uppercut and a left uppercut. And he kind of staggered him a little bit and he fell down, ground and pound, fight's over. That's it. Really impressive win. Dana White announced the matchups for next week. It's going to be Ramsey Nijem from Team Dos Santos, the only Team Dos Santos to make the semifinals. He's going to go up against Chris Cope, and then Tony Ferguson will fight Chuck O'Neill. Now we get to the drama portion, and yeah. I'll hand it over to you, Josh, to kind of explain what happened after that.
Pro wrestling wise, you turn about guys turning heel, turning bad guy. This is exactly it. To make a long story short, the guys get drunk. Tony gets some water dumped at his head and decided to flip out against Charlie Rader. Charlie Rader is having some custody issues with his ex-wife, I believe, or girlfriend, about his son. And Tony kept asking, where's your son? Where's your son? Essentially mocking the fact he doesn't have his kid.
And the fact that earlier on in the episode, Chuck O'Neill said that he was going to donate part of the money that he wins to Chuck, to Charlie.
Charlie Rader, yeah.
He's to help him in his custody battle. And Charlie Rader, to his credit, is like, I can't accept that. And Chuck O'Neill pretty much forced it. He's like, no, it's going to happen. You're going to get it.
Yeah. Tony Ferguson was so great leading up to this, and then just everyone in the house has turned against him.
His own teammates.
It's next week is going to be very interesting. Go out of your way to watch this episode. My heart was like still pumped. I want to see this guy get beat pretty
bad. And one of the last things Chuck O'Neill said to Charlie Rader was, I'm beating him. This is quote, I'm beating him. I'm taking his dreams away.
Very good. Well, I tell you what, we're going to try to get Chuck O'Neill on the show next week, I think.
I hope so.
I think we're going to go for it. We'll know by then whether he's a winner or a loser, but he'll always be a winner to us. So we're at that time, PJ. Time to say goodbye. We have had a great show. Thank you for joining us. UFC 130 preview happens this Saturday night, Las Vegas, Nevada, on pay-per-view, headlined by Rampage Jackson and Matt Hamill. Want to thank our guest, Rick Story, also fighting on that event, fighting against Thiago Alves in what should be a very, very entertaining fight. So go find that. We'll be here to talk about next week. We're going to be here to talk about, see whether Chuck O'Neill actually was able to advance to the finals. He could be fighting next weekend. And a fight for free on Spike TV, headlined by Clay Guida versus Anthony Pettis. That's going to be awesome as well.
And as always, if you miss any portion of the show, you can go to WGAMradio.com, go to the MMA show, look at the podcast, download the podcast, listen to it. Go to WGAMMMA.blogspot.com.
For PJ Hewitt, I'm Josh Nason. Thank you for listening to WGAM MMA show. And until next time, keep your chin down and your hands up. Good night.